Sharp Tongue Podcast coming to you live. Today's episode, we get into the nitty gritty talking about them titties, yo. We talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. We get right into it. We talk about how to be a little bit more fulfilled. We talk about how to have more confidence in the bedroom. We talk about how to explore your sexuality and not feel fucking bad about it. This episode gets hot and heavy. Buckle in. Sharp Tongue Podcast starts now. Hootie hoo! Stop to the TikTok, you don't stop. Stop to the TikTok, you don't stop. Stop to the TikTok, you don't stop. Sharp Tongue Podcast. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm sharpening it. What's up? What's up, my people? Man, you're in for a treat today. I recorded two of my most favorite podcasts this week with two people who I have been told about, who I found on my own, and I was so blessed to talk to these interesting and intelligent people who come from very different backgrounds and have so much to offer to the world, and I'm offering them to you. Not both in this one episode. One this week, one next week. But damn, it was a delight. And very enlightening for me, you know? I always like to figure out and discover new things about myself. Like just now, I discovered that I'm a pig. Because I farted about 7 times. I left myself in my own fucking fart cloud. I have no respect for myself. That's what I discovered. I was like, man, you know, this just isn't right. Why am I leaving myself in my own fart cloud? I should have a little bit more consideration for myself as a human. I'm very excited because this week I'm going to the Montreal Comedy Festival. It's my first time there. I'm going to be recording a TV set for LOL Live, and I'm going to do another show, a warm-up show for that, and hang out, hopefully get some podcasts in. Hang out with a bunch of my comedian friends. Dom Irera is going to be there. Hopefully I can podcast with him. That would be amazing. My friend Chris Mazzilli, who owns Gotham, is going to be there. Everyone's there. It's super exciting, you know, as a comedian to embark on these milestones that sort of make up the bigger picture of your career. So I'm very excited. I want to thank all my fans for sticking by me and supporting me and laughing at me and all that shit. You know, I can't do this shit without you guys. So yeah, I'm pumped about that. And then in August, other places I'm going to be, let me tell you, let me pull up my calendar here. Let's see, I'm going to be in Syracuse, just chilling out with my family in mid-August. Then August 18th, 19th, and 20th, I'll be in Grand Rapids, Michigan at Dr. Grin's Comedy Club. 18th, 19th, and 20th, Grand Rapids, Michigan. August 26th, I'll be at Iowa State University. August 27th, I will be at Ram's Head on stage in Annapolis, Maryland. And then September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, Memorial Day weekend, Labor Day weekend, I will be at Comics Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. I don't know what kind of fucking name Uncasville is. Maybe I'm saying it wrong. Comics Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. So check me out, jessiemay.com for tickets. If you message me at sharptonguepodcast@gmail.com, I will consider giving you free tickets. Mention this podcast, show me that you're subscribed, and I'll give you some free fucking tickets. Go to jessiemay.com to see where I'm going to be. I'm very excited. I'm going to start recording my podcast live. I'm pumped about that. I'm going to embark on also a couple new show ideas. I'm going to try and put some content out there for you guys so you can see my cute fucking face. You know what I'm saying? I am too cute. I sleep in motherfucking satin sheets. I don't fuck with your thread count. I don't fucks with your thread count. I'm an important person, motherfucker. I get my nails dead. I don't know what just happened. Okay. So, yes, come find me. Stalk me on the internets. I got my Snapchat up. I got my Instagram. I got my Twits. I'm all over the place. I'm here for you, okay? And for my dogs. So check me out. Find me. I'm going to get right into this episode because we talk about some real shit. Some real shit with this guest. He's been seen on The Doctors. He's currently on Amber Rose's new show on VH1. And he is a certified doctor. And he is somebody who can shed some light on all of our lives because we live in a very sexually repressed society. And life is too short to not explore your sexuality. He is a sex therapist, even though he doesn't really like to say the word therapist because it kind of is associated with an antiquated way of approaching sexual issues. So I'm going to call him a sex doctor because that's really what he is. And it was a delight to talk to him. He shed some light on my situation and he gave me some insights and enlightenment about my own being. And I want to share that with you guys. So I hope you enjoy my interview with Dr. Chris Donahue. Sharp Tongue Podcast. This one I'm really excited about. And I was trying to talk to you before, but I was like, I'm going to save the juice for the podcast. We have Dr. Chris Donahue.
Hello.
Did I say it properly?
Yeah, you nailed it.
The G really threw me off
the
in
G
your name.
The G throws everybody off. We got to get rid of that.
Donahue.
I know.
Has anyone ever been like, Dr. Donahue?
No.
No.
Usually no. It's just misspelled. It hasn't been mispronounced yet. But that's actually pretty good.
I was telling you before that I looked you up on my own because I wanted to have a sex therapist. I do need one. And you asked me, what was the question that you asked me?
Well, I was curious what keywords you were using in searching for the perfect sex therapist.
Unqualified. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you didn't click and send me an email.
No, then. It was the opposite. I looked up, the keyword was best sex therapist in LA.
And I came up?
You came up.
Phenomenal.
And two other women. And I saved the tab because I was like, I'm going to do research on these, you know, do my due diligence.
But that's my question. So what would you be researching next?
To start off like getting into the thick of it, but my listeners already know, when I was 16, my first sexual experience, I was raped.
Okay.
So I looked up like people who dealt with that sort of thing outside of just their normal sex therapy, dealing with that sort of, right, you know, tragedy, if you want to call it that. So that's something that I've dealt with my whole life, and I've been trying to figure out how to navigate through just being a girl in a relationship and having that sort of thing.
This could become the entire episode.
Well, I go in and out of it a lot, like talking about this shit because it's something that happens. It's not something that has any longer been this cloud over me. I've learned to sort of deal with it, but you know, I got to make light of it also.
Well, I think you're actually calling out something really important, which is that sex. Okay. So culturally, I think sex is always put down as a side thing that just happens sometimes with a partner in a bedroom.
Do you think American?
Yeah, for sure.
You're speaking like the American culture.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And what you're pointing out is that we carry it with us always. Our sexuality is what we dress like, how close we sit with someone, how long we make eye contact, how comfortable we are when someone flirts with us, thoughts we think about. It's always operating on us. It's like hunger and breathing and energy. It's always there.
What do you think, somebody not like me who has like a sexual issue from the past, just like a normal person, what do you think are some of the things that you see as a professional that are consistent issues with people in society? Like maybe women specifically, and we can get into like men too, but like what do you see as a constant with American women?
Yeah, number one is body shame.
Yeah.
Body shame. Thinking I have the wrong body, thinking my body's not hot. Struggling to look away other than the way I am, not feeling that my body is sexy while I'm having sex. What do I look like?
Yeah, there's, you know,
fear
that
of their sexuality.
Just, it's so hard to fuck and not be like, are my knees gross?
But that's horrible sex. But think about that. Think about how bad of a sex partner you are if you're thinking about how attractive your knees are.
I'm terrible.
Here I am with you, trying to enjoy you, trying to get to know you, and you're literally checking out psychologically because you're worrying about your knees, how your boobs look.
You worry about noises that are... There's
yeah,
so
totally.
Many things that take me... like, and that definitely, I think, goes into my own specific issues, but I definitely think women share that, where you are, there's so many dumb factors that you allow to shake you off that fuck train.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Okay, so start really broad. Number one, what kind of magazines do you have sitting on your coffee table that you are putting and feeding into your brain multiple times a day? What TV shows are you looking at? Hand me your phone. Let me look at what you're following on Instagram.
Absolutely not.
And this, but that is why you have the body issues.
Yeah, and you know,
if you unfollow that shit.
It's so weird that you say that, because as you were, when you said body shame, the first thing I thought of was being a little girl and looking at these magazines. Mm-hmm. And the magazines, even though there's such a facade
because they're glossy and they put this false thing that they're trying to make you feel good. But once you read these magazines, especially as a kid, you feel like shit.
Yeah, but here's the thing. We have to stop saying they, and we have to start saying we.
We,
because
okay, you're
we
right.
Buy them, which keeps them being made. If we
you're
stop
right.
buying them, we stop making them. Mm-hmm. Anyone listening, if you're a photographer, please stop only taking pictures of white, skinny,
fuck,
cisgendered females. Use some normal fat bodies.
Yeah, and stop photoshopping their
totally,
knees.
Totally. But here's the thing. I always tell my fashion and photography friends, use people, don't use models. Models do not need to exist. They really, really,
they
really don't.
Get rid of that
shit.
They don't. Like, eat a sandwich.
Eat whatever you want. Just stop stop using a certain body type.
It but is so, kind of
so
it
you
is
have
annoying.
Control over that. So that's what I'd say to you. But here's the other thing. How unerotic is it going to feel for you if you're with me sexually and you're not even paying attention to what we're doing?
And it's
that's not
so
fair to you.
Hard.
It's not fair to me.
So what do you do as a professional? Like, therapist? Is that your how
yeah,
what is your alkaloid?
I don't,
your medical alkaloid?
I don't like that word because the assumptions are that I operate from a standard whitewash cultural normative perspective, and I don't. So here's a rough example. Most therapists, or even sex therapists, sadly, would say that we do therapy on sex. That's bullshit. What I do is I help clients use sex therapeutically. Because the solution to someone saying, I don't like my body, I think I'm fat, is to go have a lot of sex. Why? Because how will you feel better if you don't learn to see your body as erotic, to see other people wanting your body, to see other people enjoying your body? Where another therapist would say, let's work on these internal processes that are making you, there's nothing internal. Your body issues are coming from the outside in. Let's get rid of the magazines you're looking
at.
Let's follow more supportive things on your Tumblr. Let's have a lot more sex. Go on a webcam. Do you know what it'd feel like if you went on a webcam and masturbated in front of thousands of people cheering you on? I promise you, you will feel better about your fat,
naked
body.
Someone better fucking slow clap for me.
They will slow clap for you. But that's where sex heals. And so what is my title? I don't even know. Sex therapist, doctor of sexual psychology, psychologist. I don't even care.
And how do you, like, so talking about body shame, and that's one of the main issues you think chicks
for sure,
have.
For sure.
How do you begin getting into that? Like, for me, let's take my case specifically.
Okay.
Instead of talking about broadly, what would you recommend? And you can ask any question you want to ask
okay.
me to get to the dirt.
What's your stated issue?
What's my stated issue?
You really want to do a therapy session right now?
I mean, how much are you going to charge me?
A lot. We have so much to cover.
I know.
I have a book. I have a TV show.
We need 7 years in Tibet for my fucking shit.
Blast.
I think I have a hard time being in the moment.
Well, I would say two things. And a lot of people want this magic, quick bullet that will solve everything in 45 minutes in my office. And I tell them work is really hard. Because before I even hear you tell me that, the first thing I'd say is that you literally have to be more sensitive to what are the things that you're surrounding yourself with and what kind of message are they giving you? Because your psyche is literally built up of all of the things that you surround yourself with in terms of social media and media. Start there.
I've never even considered that. I have to
no
be honest.
Does.
I'm a smart person. I've never considered, I know that they influence me because that when you said that about body shaming, I went right to that moment
for sure.
as like a 6-year-old looking at these dumb fucking magazines.
Yeah.
But I've never, as an adult, there's so much, you're right. Like the antiquated thing is like, there's so much focus on the internal, which mm-hmm. is important, but mm-hmm. you can't
How
shut
does
out
it
the
get,
external.
Wait, right. The internal is a product of the external.
Yes.
And yet as therapists, we naively and ignorantly, I think, just go right to the internal and ignore the fact that you can't do anything in 45 minutes or an hour in your office and then send them back into the world.
With all that shit.
All that shit and think that somehow you're going to put a dent in that. It's impossible. But when I tell clients that, when I say to them, stop watching crap reality television, stop following crappy magazines, they panic. And I say to them, well, that's part of the work though. And what kind of things are you talking to your friends about? Are you with friends that say things like, I feel fat? Because number one, fat's not a feeling. And number two, that is them again, making bodies and a certain kind of body the focus of everything. Tell your friends, I don't want that kind of relationship. Let's not talk like that anymore.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because it exists so much on like a subliminal level.
Totally. And guys have it too, especially in LA.
What do you think are the issues with dudes?
Well, just as far as body image, I'm working out at Crunch. There's ceiling to floor window. I'm staring at an underwear ad with a dude, and all the women are behind me and guys behind me looking at that. They're thinking that's what everyone's supposed to look like.
You're supposed to be on the treadmill
trying
to get that.
I'm aware of that. Totally. So there I am doing my crunches and my curls saying I need to be that. I need to look like that to be okay. So guys have that as well, for sure.
And then you put those two things together in a bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And
naked
and you know
with someone you really like and you want
yeah,
them to like you so
yeah.
it feels fragile and vulnerable.
It's very interesting. And for me, like, it's always been really difficult for me to have an orgasm. I can have them, but the scenario has to be so specific. Did a fly right. just, as I say yeah, that, a fly flies right out of my crotch. No wonder.
yeah, that might be part of your problem.
Moths are coming out of my vagina.
But the problem with orgasming isn't uncommon. And I mean, again, it's so complex because number one, a lot of the women that can't orgasm don't have an early history of masturbation. Women that masturbated early and consistently tend to be more able to orgasm. But think about why that would be. They're more comfortable with sex. They're more comfortable with being aroused. And that's the thing is we shame that. We shame sex with girls from a very young age.
We sure do. And to me, that's the one downfall that is really detrimental to being a whole person. Mm-hmm. Parents try to shy away from that because they're afraid of their kids embarking on their sexual being as a part of their whole life. And it's just, to me, it's like, here's an example. I used to bartend and one of my clients would come in and he told me about his...
I like how you call them clients.
I call them clients because,
it makes it sound more professional.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I was slinging beers at 10 a.m. for these guys. They're getting wasted doing shots at Jack's, but they're my clients.
Sure.
This one guy who had a daughter at 7 figured out how to masturbate and she called it hot vagina.
Wow.
And he came in one day and he looked like death had just fallen over him, his face. And I was like, what's going on? He goes, my daughter found hot vagina. And I was like, hold the phone. I need to figure out what the fuck you're talking about. What's hot vagina? And his babysitter said that his daughter was sitting in the seat and figuring out how to.
But of course, our bodies are able to derive pleasure from birth. There's no, when people talk about masturbating too young, I say, I don't even know what that means.
What does that mean?
Do you hug your baby? Do you scratch their back? Do you kiss them? Okay, then you're aware of sensory pleasure. There are images of children in utero stimulating and rubbing their genitals because it feels good. It's a form of self-soothing. Here's another big topic. So right now, running rampant is this whole thing called sex addiction. Sex addiction doesn't exist. There's a lot of people in the field using that word. There's TV shows about it. It's not real. None of the diagnostic manuals recognize it. APA doesn't acknowledge it, not the American Psychological Association. It doesn't really exist. You can't bill insurance for it. So right now it's unethical to use that word clinically. People are still doing it. The problem is that we're using terms like that to continue to shame sex and masturbation as a form of pleasure and self-soothing. Here's what I say all the time, and it's in my book, Sex Outside the Lines.
Buy it. I'll put a link up. Can I put a link up on my site? Cool.
But here's one of the things I say is that if I said to you, oh, you know, I watched football for 6 hours on Sunday, you're like, cool. And if someone said, oh, I watched a Real Housewives marathon for 6 hours, you're like, cool. But if I said I masturbated for 6 hours, holy shit, you're a sex addict.
You're
really?
Crazy. What's
Why
wrong with you?
Why aren't you a Real Housewives addict? Why aren't you a football addict? Why can I travel the world looking at art, but I can't travel the world for sex without being a sex addict? I mean,
that's really interesting.
And
it's a basic thing. Sex is a basic thing.
Totally.
And it really will make you a whole person. Like, I'm back to my friend's daughter. I look at her and I told him, I'm like, you don't need to worry.
No, what's to worry about?
She's going to be amazing.
She might pleasure herself too much.
Right.
What you're actually learning is she's going to have a healthy adult sex life.
Yep.
Because she's going to value her body and orgasm and self-pleasure. She'll orgasm with her partners, which I know he doesn't want to hear about that when she's 7. But that's a beautiful thing.
It
she
really
will not
is.
End up in my office.
No,
he
will.
He does not. Yeah. You are. You will.
You're
and
in
today
my
you're
office,
in it. Yeah.
But it's your office today.
Yeah, for sure. But that's a great example. Is that's one of the problems with not being able to orgasm. And a fear of asking for what you want. That's another thing. A lot of women come in and they'll say, you know, I need the guy to stimulate me longer to orgasm. I'm afraid to ask for that. Or I'm afraid to ask that he does whatever. Because a lot of times the guy gets off and then they high five and, you know.
Yeah. Well, society also has built this standard for what sex is. And our, well, you know, I won't say they, we. we
empower yourself.
But there is this sort of thing I've noticed being a woman where men, it's about them getting off and they aren't trying to figure out how to get the woman off. But as a woman, it's your responsibility to also know what you
Absolutely.
Want.
You're responsible for your own orgasm. Look, I say this. Ideally, we would live in a more compassionate culture where we all cared about others a lot more, but we don't. And so unfortunately, yes, you are responsible for your orgasm, which means you're going to have to educate them on what feels good to you. Ask for it. Tell them, please keep going. Once they get off, ask, you know, let them know you haven't.
Man, there's just, I got to figure out my shit. I really need to figure out my shit because I feel like I'm at this middle ground where I'm making leeway. Here's a crazy scenario for you. Okay. Not scenario. Actually, So I have a hard time having an orgasm, right? But I can do it. I can stimulate myself while I'm having sex. It can happen. Right. It's just, it takes a lot. I have to really get out of my head. But I was on edibles. Do you partake?
I don't. I don't do sugar or weed. Marijuana.
There's nothing wrong with that. I enjoy the marijuana. I've just started embarking on the edibles.
Which, by the way, I am pro marijuana. I'm pro medical marijuana.
Everybody it's out there, important. FYI, Dr. Donahue is pro.
For sure.
If you know, because
I'd rather people use weed than them use pharmaceuticals.
Right.
I'd rather them use weed than a Xanax or Zoloft or Prozac, which, by the way, has long term damage, especially to sexual functioning. That studies are showing once you've come off does not necessarily go away.
Holy fuck!
Marijuana does not have that.
It does not have that. Once it leaves your body, it's like bye. We'll see you tomorrow at 8 a.m. again. But I ate these edibles and I experienced this sensation where I felt like I could have an orgasm spontaneously just by thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I've had these orgasms in my sleep where I have dreams and I have an orgasm without touching myself. I've been with, you know, ex-boyfriends and they're like, you sounded like you had an orgasm in your sleep. And my boyfriend right now, you know, he's like, you were touching yourself in your sleep. So there's something happening in my sleep where my brain isn't stressing about everything.
You're saying all the right words. That's it. You're in a state psychologically and biologically, you're actually able to relax. You're open. You're not stressing. I mean, the worst thing for sexual functioning for guys and girls, for erections and orgasm, is to be stressed or to be not aroused and thinking about something else. Because to orgasm and get an erection, you have to actually relax and be open. And when you're thinking and you're pressured, and that happens with guys. I have to get hard. I have to stay hard.
You go to fuck her.
I have to last long. I go to fuck her. That's the most unerotic, stressful thing, and that will actually work against you. And that's why I say to guys, too, good sex and good lovers don't just use their penis. They use their fingers and tongues and toys.
Fucking A.
And they go in and out, and they're grabbing different things. And if you're hard, you use it. When you're not, you don't. It doesn't matter. You have all the time in the world. But again, we don't think in those terms. We got to get it done. It's got to end with orgasm.
Orgasm.
It's got to be penetration.
Yeah.
We can't get off any other way.
Oh,
we can't just mutually masturbate or just go down on each other.
It's got to be the one fucking thing.
Totally.
Jackhammer.
Totally.
My head's hitting the wall.
Horrible sex.
What
though.
The fuck just happened?
Mm-hmm.
Are you an ex-con?
So
are you
going to
call me back?
But wait, I don't want to bring your boyfriend into this, but let's bring him into this. You know, if he's that kind of guy, that's not going to help.
No, he's not. He's an amazing lover.
Okay.
He's very, sometimes we have sex and I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, he just knows how to appreciate a body.
Oh,
and it's great. Like the first time. And so it inspires me to like try and relax more and be more in the moment. But so I took these edibles, right? And I had this conscious moment where normally in my sleep I have these orgasms. I took these edibles, I took a little nap, and I felt that sensation. And so I woke myself up and I'm like, well, I'm gonna try and carry this sensation through while I'm awake,
right,
to see if I can accomplish the task. And so my boyfriend and I went at it, and I almost had an orgasm, the closest time I've ever been in my life. It didn't happen because he was so excited. We, you know, finished and that was that.
No. Say that again.
He was so excited.
Happened? He what?
Okay. I didn't get to that point.
Okay. Why did it stop when he was done orgasming?
Because
that's the problem. That's what
I didn't communicate.
About. Right.
But
here we
are.
Here we are at the big moment. We didn't get there because he came and that decided that sex was done.
Right.
Okay.
I didn't communicate to him.
Yeah. Hey, congrats. You came. Let's keep going.
Right.
I didn't yet.
It's all about yourself. It's
totally.
All about, yeah.
Because even though he might now lose his erection because he came, he still has a tongue. He still has fingers.
Yeah.
There are still toys. He can watch you masturbate. He can masturbate. I mean, there's so many
things
that can happen.
And it's up to me to be like, hey, let's keep going.
Totally.
See, and that's the thing. Like, women and people in general are afraid to say what they want.
Not me. I promise you, I come each and every time in the ways that I need to and want to. Because I won't be with a partner that won't engage me in any other way. And I've worked on myself, and that's confidence. And maybe I'm in a privileged position maybe to pull that off, but we all have to do that. Where, you know, you're in the room as well. You have to be there.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I think about, like, opening my mind more as far as, like, sexuality. And, you know, I'm a straight girl,
mm-hmm.
but I've never been with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been in a scenario where I'm going to get it on with a woman. But I'm wondering, do you think if... just trying that, even though you think it's not something you want, but just putting yourself in that position can open up more things?
Well,
how do you feel about that?
I'll say this. You can be very fluid and circle in and out of different things. I think everyone would be best served by trying everything at least once. But again, there's a panic of what will that mean if I do that?
Right. What's my label?
That's exactly what it is. What did I then just become that I can't then walk away from? But here's the big news. Everyone gets to diagnose and label themselves. So if you want to call yourself hetero as a guy and suck dicks left and right, you're still a straight guy.
Yeah, who cares?
Because you get to tell me. Right. But here's the thing. If a girl is with a guy, she's straight. Then she can be with a girl and then go back to a guy and still be straight. But
yeah.
If a dude is with a girl and then sucks a dick, he's gay and he's not allowed to circle back. What's up with that? But here's the thing. Get rid of all the labels and try everything and you get to tell us who you are. But I think you should. Why would you not? Sex is good. Nothing bad would have happened if in the middle of being with a woman you realize, you know, I'm not really into this. Stop.
Right.
Tell her that. Hey, this sounded good. I'm not really feeling this. So, you know, thanks for coming by.
Yeah. That's interesting, man. Labels, and I was talking with somebody about this, like, especially in LA. I always say LA stands for labels because this Ooh. Town is built on labels.
Yeah.
Entertainment industry is built on genres. Sure. Are you a writer, producer? What the fuck
Absolutely.
Are you doing? And we do get caught up in labels, and it's such a double standard for men.
Well, it limits who you are. It limits what you can do. It's very shaming for guys. Girls are a little more comfortable being, you know, sexually fluid and open. For guys, it's horrifying. I do it with guys who are curious and wondering, but they're afraid, again, of what that means and what would they be called and can they go back to what they were before. But that's why I won't use labels with my patients. I don't use any diagnostics. I think even the words depression is limiting. Because depression
really is
sometimes in some ways for some people's, and I won't use any of them. So I think I agree. And that's why I won't identify as anything. I won't live in that world. And
yeah,
so,
because it's limiting.
Totally.
And then it limits your ability to be in the moment because you're like, well, if this is my label, then I can't go outside this boundary right here.
And the label doesn't even tell you anything because there's, you know, even if we just use the labels of male and female, there's as many differences between females as there are between a male and a female. So if you say I'm a girl, I learned nothing about you. I didn't even learn about your anatomy because not all women that have external female anatomy have the same matching internal. Unless you've had a chromosome test, I don't even know if you're male or female in some ways. I don't know what the internal looks like. And just when someone says like even gay, I don't even know what that means. I mean, a 50-year-old wealthy black gay man is not the same kind of gay man as a 13-year-old white street
yeah.
drug addict. Like, what are you even talking about? There's
right.
no gay community. There's no straight community. We have to let go of these terms.
We really do. And, you know, even like within those communities, holding steadfast to those labels can be
sure.
damaging, don't you think?
Sure. Yeah, but we're moving out of it. I mean, you know, I say this a lot. I look to the teenagers and my niece who's 15 to see what's going on, and they're not labeling themselves as anything. They're like, I like girls, I like guys, I'm queer. No, maybe I'm gay, maybe I'm straight. And I'm like, yeah, don't choose
your
anything
nieces and nephews.
Ever. Yeah,
that's amazing.
That's where I learn all this stuff from, though.
That's amazing.
That's where we're headed.
So their parents are totally open and supportive.
Yeah, I mean, and again, they're lucky because this is a girl whose parents live in LA. Her mom is a makeup artist in the industry, so she's going to be a little more, you know, open and fluid than
yeah.
some other parents. But, you know, my book talks about gender-neutral parenting and trying to get us away from some of this, so getting there slowly.
It's tough, man. Because, you know, growing up in my generation, we didn't have all the social media. And now where I'm at now, I feel blessed to at least have the both spectrums of the influence without it and the influence with it. But as a kid, I remember growing up and those lanes were very specific.
Mm-hmm.
Girls play with pink things. Boys play with blue things. And you stay in your lanes. And
but,
that's that.
But that's what causes a lot of the problems, why guys are afraid of women, don't know how to approach them because we've trained them to believe it's something separate. We never allow you to get to know them because from grade school, girls over there, guys over there, sit in different seats, use different bathrooms, and you create this false
yeah.
sense of difference, which does not exist.
Yeah.
If we got rid of the gender labels, we wouldn't be able to tell a distinction because there really isn't one psychologically. Even the male-female brain has been proven bunk.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Totally.
So we're getting there slowly. I think Walmart now has like gender-neutral toys where there's not a girl aisle or a guy. It's just toys, which is awesome. So again, we're getting there.
Have you seen that video of that little girl in the toy
yes!
aisle?
Yes! Yes! Yes, where the parent said something about girls' toys.
Yeah, she's like, why do I have to, I want to play, like that's what I'm thinking, like pink things and blue things.
Sure.
She's like, why are all the girl stuff pink and all the blue stuff, all the boy stuff blue?
Yeah.
She's like, boys can play with princesses. I want to play with,
yeah.
like, you know, whatever she wants to play with.
But some parents
Tonka,
will fight
Tonka
that.
Trunks.
Some parents will fight that.
They do.
My little girl is not going to play with a blue truck.
Like, because what? Because we're brainwashed.
For sure.
We're fucking brainwashed in society.
But media keeps us there. You know, I watch these segments on shows where they'll say something like, dress for your body type. That is the most fat-shaming, body-shaming thing ever. Wear whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah,
there is no
cares?
Right thing for the right body type. But I'll see, you know, Tyra Banks doing that and these little segments, and I'm like, and I tweet at them. I'm like, please stop shaming bodies. And please stop telling women that you have to look a certain way to dress a certain way. So I was just on Amber's show with Tess Holliday, who's a really beautiful, famous plus-size model. And she did this amazing campaign where, sadly, Oprah in her magazine or something Oprah-related, she had done this thing about the right bodies for crop tops. And Tess is a fat supermodel, and she wore a crop top, and she's like, anybody can wear a crop top. And it's like, yes, dear fashion industry and people like Tyra, please stop promoting the ideas that there's a certain thing, certain way to dress for a certain type of body.
It's terrible.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. And you know, when you were like, what are the magazines you have on your table? What are the things you're exposing yourself
to?
Tell me. Well, for me, it's such a... I need to know what is being said out there because of what I do for a living.
For sure.
And what I've found myself doing lately, I have this battle because I see stuff that People Magazine posts, you know, Cosmopolitan, and all these magazines and articles and places where they just put this stuff out there that is so damaging. And I want to say something about it. And I usually do, but there's always that... spark in my brain where I go, you might not want to.
Yeah, because you got to work with them.
Because I got to work with them in the future. Totally. But like, they posted something a couple weeks ago. I think it was People Magazine, and it was like, so and so put on some weight. Like they were shaming some famous person about putting on weight. And the ripple that sends through society is so fucking damaging.
Yep.
Because then it sets this standard of what's okay.
Yep.
And if you put on weight, the fucking everything stops. And all eyes are on you, and how gross.
Listen, let me tell you something. So I'm someone who goes to the gym 6 days a week because I live in LA. I work in television. I know I need to look a certain way to get book certain things I book. Oftentimes they tell me to wear something form-fitting to show off my biceps. So it's that tension of, I don't want to play into that, but I also have to for my career. And so I'm trapped in as well. But let me tell you a story. Like 4 months ago, I just finished having sex with someone. And there I am. Naked, feeling fine, having a great day. And this is what it said to me. You know, you'd be really hot if you were skinny.
What?
Yes.
We all
have to hear it. And I wrote about that on my social media. And
said
everyone's
that
like,
to you after sex.
Totally. And on my
what
social media, everyone's like, you look great. Like, you're so in shape. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Thanks. Cool. But that doesn't mean that, like, it doesn't trickle and leak everywhere.
Everywhere.
Totally. It never stops.
And it may not even be something, like, this is the fucked up part about society. The things we say aren't necessarily the things we feel.
Right.
They're just things we've been taught to think.
Sure.
And it's not even connected to our souls or our sensibilities.
No, and that's honestly the message I try to get out in my work is you have a right to be with people that you're physically attracted to. But you also, if you want a long-term sustainable relationship, have to look for a connection bigger than that and outside of that.
Elaborate
on that.
It
can't just be so body-centric. Well, so we're dating on apps now, mostly.
Ugh.
I know.
I don't fucking do that.
I do.
I'm not judging you, but
I
can't.
I have to learn. Well, it's kind of like what you said about magazines. I have to, in order to work with patients that are on these apps, I have to really understand them.
It's true.
And I am currently single, so I'm on there and I'm learning some horrific things.
Ugh.
But the number one thing is that it's all about your market value because we're dating from those based on an image.
Mm-hmm. And the little sentence that goes under it's just
right.
it's
what can I put in one sentence that exemplifies all that
yeah.
I am?
It's like
that
your
might
bio.
Make you want me. Yeah. It's like shopping online. I have to make myself valuable in one sentence. Really hard.
Yeah. you don't get to squeeze the avocado to see if it's ripe. You just
you
have
don't.
To look at a photo of it and trust
you
that
don't.
It's organic
you
and good
don't.
For you.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard. So things are changing. I don't know where it's all gonna take us. But a good number of my clients and patients are all online. Thousands of thousands are joining a day. So we're losing, I think, a little bit of real-time confidence-based mm-hmm. skill where no longer are we going to walk up to someone in Starbucks and have to hit on them because I can go on my phone and on Tinder have access to hundreds of people.
Right.
That's not necessarily a good thing.
You have quote-unquote access because you don't have like real access to them. And, you know, have you ever seen that movie WALL-E?
No. The cartoon.
It's a cartoon, but it's really for adults.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite movies, and it sort of depicts the future of civilization based around technology and how the irony of the what's the word I'm looking for? technology makes everything so convenient is that we become a prisoner to it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We become just these lazy slobs that have these screens in front of us, and we don't know how, we don't even communicate on a real moment level. We're just in our little bubble. And I think that's where we're headed. Even though technology, the advances are amazing, especially in the medical industry and all this, you know, technology, like building things and NASA and all this shit is amazing. But when it comes to like people and communicating, it makes me terrified.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's because it's eye contact and touch that really help us build intimacy. And if you're not utilizing that, you're not able to really take in a person. And so I tell people, date online if you want, because I know some people are really, really busy or they don't like bars and they want to have access to people. And it gives you a wider range of who you can ask out. Because there was a time when I could only ask out the people at my local bar. Now I can ask out someone in Germany if
sure
I want,
can.
Right? Sure can.
Which is cool.
Sure do.
It's cool.
It's cool.
You build a circle.
Meet them in real time as soon as possible.
Yes.
Because these relationships are being built over text and technology, and they can come crashing down as soon as you make eye contact and touch them.
It's done.
And the chemistry isn't there.
If I can't smell your fart cloud, I don't wanna talk to you. I'm not, you know what I mean?
What?
What does your fart cloud smell like?
Wait, I don't know that I even know what that means. I don't know that I even want to be a part of that.
I just feel like, I don't know, I'm on both, at like both sides of that spectrum. And you know, I have a boyfriend now, and I've only, like, I was on Match.com years ago, that was before apps.
Right.
And I met somebody and dated them or whatever. And then for research, just kind of like what you have done, also, you know, you're using it to date.
Sure.
I signed up for a couple of these apps. And it's the same thing where people lie. I went at this guy, you know, I'm looking at all his fucking nutrition facts on his profile. You know, I got all these things. Yeah, yeah.
Facts.
You know, he's like 6'2".
His ingredients.
Yeah, all of ingredients that make him up. Obviously, it's the best of the best.
Of course.
But it's also lies. So he said he was like 6'2" and all this stuff. You know, he's like a producer, blah, 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 whatever. And I was like, all right.
But also, it shows you what our culture values.
Yes.
If he had to say he was taller than he is, and it's pointing out that in our culture, you have to be a certain height to be acceptable. So,
right.
But go ahead.
So,
did you shame him for being shorter?
No, I didn't shame him for being shorter. Because, you know, for me, it's about connection. I don't give a fuck how tall you are. I don't care what your waist size is. Are you a smart person? Are you a good person? Are you interesting? Are you motivated? Those are the things, like, that matter to me. So, we meet. He picks me up and doesn't get out of the fucking car. First of all, where the fuck is the romance and chivalry? Like, open a goddamn door.
We're gonna have a fight over this. Go ahead.
Okay, we can have
all
a fight.
All I'm hearing is sexism, sexism, sexism.
No, but
go ahead.
In my mind, I do want a little bit of that shit.
Sexism?
Just all of it. All that sexism.
I want gender norms, sexism, segregation.
Listen, I'm open to you being like, these are things that you don't need to focus on. Because it's important for me to tell you how I feel.
Sure.
And you to be like, well, this is why it's a little shifted of a perspective for you to say you want this guy to open the goddamn door for you. But
I want to hear what was wrong.
Well,
he wasn't tall enough.
in retrospect, like, I felt that way. Like, you should have opened a damn door because you weren't honest about how fucking tall you were.
That must have been a real fun date. He owed you a lot, apparently, huh?
So I get into his Jeep, right? And I'm sizing him up. I'm looking at him. I'm like, this dude's torso is as long as my torso. He's not 6'2".
Right.
And I'm not mad that he's not 6'2".
But
I'm,
you lied.
I'm mad that you told me
you
were 6'2".
I'm with you on that. If I were to meet someone off of online or whatnot and I was lied to, I'd probably have to exit immediately because I understand that you're the victim of our cultural norms and you don't live up to them. But I need someone who's a little more confident and can embody who they are because that's not going to be erotic to me if you're uncomfortable in your height and your
right.
body and all that. And so that would be a deal breaker just from the door.
Okay, now let's chop down the sexism.
Sure. Oh, anytime. Well, I mean, the basic definition of sexism is anytime you want to be treated special because of your gender, it's sexism. I used to get in a fight with my mom about this where she'd be like, I'm a feminist. In my head, I'm like, you are not, but that's cool. And then she.
Why
like,
would you say she's not?
I'll tell you why.
Because
she still wanted my dad to pay for dinner, order for her, open the door, and get gas in her car. Which
interesting.
That's not feminism.
And that's what is sexism. Feminism?
I would say, well, now, current third wave 2015 or 2016.
Yeah, no, we're in 2016.
Is more gender equality, where we don't make decisions or have expectations based on your anatomy and gender. And if you want special treatment based on the fact that you have a vagina, you are stepping out of the realm of current feminism and you're moving into sexism.
See, treatment I agree special. With that.
Yeah.
But I was just
like,
saying,
if I go on a date with you tonight, which I know you have a boyfriend, you should not expect that I'm paying.
I agree. agree with that.
Bring your wallet. Because, and ideally, if I had a great date, if I had a great date. And apparently, you're going to have to open your own damn door, too.
A bunch of girls' vaginas just dried up.
I know. My phone just went dry. No, but listen, this is how I feel. If I went on a date with you tonight and had a great time, I would want to pay. But that would not be because of our gender, but because of me wanting to let you know that I enjoyed you and had a really great time.
Right.
And so it'd be an act of that. It happens a lot at elevators where I'm standing next to a woman in the elevator, the door opens, and there's this expectation that she should get out first. But why?
What is
that elevator
shit? Because you have a vagina, not a penis?
It's fascinating.
It's so, I have such anxiety over it when I'm in the elevator. This happened like
you stress.
It causes me so much stress. I stress about everything. I was in the elevator and there was a guy in there, and in my mind, I'm like, who's going to leave?
But this is the kind of things you think about during sex, too.
It is.
My knees.
And then I even think about the elevator guy.
Who's going to pay for dinner tonight?
During sex. Like it's all this societal stuff that gets stuck in like the little crevasses of our brain.
But here's the problem. Listen, if you want to date a guy that's sexist, that's cool. But then you can't complain when he's sexist.
It's true.
So if you want him to pick you up, open the door, pay for everything, he's also going to probably tell you, I want to look through your phone. No, you can't do a girl's weekend away.
Yeah.
And you can't wear that makeup or something. Like,
right.
You can't complain about it being congruent. And so, you know, my older brother is currently single, and he's what I would deem to be the best model of what any woman should want.
Really?
Right? Yeah, just really smart, really successful, knows about wines, likes to travel, just really amazing. And his whole thing is that I don't want a girl that isn't up to date enough and would always make me pay. He's like, I love when a girl offers to pay.
Yeah.
Even if I don't let her, I want her to still offer. I think that's appropriate. I think that's respectful. He does want a girl that's going to get married to him and raise children, where he raises his daughters to submit to a guy because they're a girl.
Yeah.
Because that's in there too.
It really is. And you know, that's the one thing, like when I started dating my boyfriend, I would offer to pay for things.
Good.
Because I don't...
You're polite.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of this like wanting romance, but also wanting to like...
They're both romantic.
It is, right?
I think so. Yes, when someone says, I care about you, I value you, I want to show you that by buying you flowers or paying for you, that is romance to me. That is them saying that I care about you.
Yeah. But it's... God, there's so much out, like external stuff that we allow mm-hmm. to dictate how we communicate and interact with people.
But that's what all my work is based on. Anything, any podcast I'm on, the TV shows I'm on, my book, it's all about trying to get us to acknowledge that and start to dismantle that.
And for you, like, do you battle with yourself? Because this is your field, this is your work. But I'm sure, you're a human being. Mm-hmm. What brought you to this work? Like, how did you find that? You'd be good at it.
I was raised in our standard culture. My parents were not beyond what we're talking about. You know, I was raised in a very white, elitist, capitalist, you know, a lot of racism in there. I was not raised in the best environment. It was the East Coast suburbs.
Oh shit. Like, I was gonna say, where were you raised?
Philadelphia suburbs.
Oh,
it wasn't progressive by any means.
Yeah.
But I went up to NYU for college, and New York City, I met friends of all different kinds of genders and sexualities and relational styles. I ran around in like the club scene, and mm-hmm. so I was really exposed to a lot of things. And then just getting into sex therapy, you're really forced, if you do the appropriate training and actually get certified, which few are, and you're forced to really encounter the health of different relational styles, where I had to explore and work with clients that are coming in that are open or polyamorous, and seeing these are really intelligent, healthy people. Wait a minute, what I'd been taught in psychology and culture that that's not appropriate, or there's a lack of intimacy, isn't true. Clients coming in that have a wealth of sexual interests that psychology and culture says are unhealthy, and I'm realizing it's not.
Yeah.
Different people coming in saying they don't have a gender, don't want one. And again, psychology says that's not okay. So does culture. But then I realize it is okay. So that's why I put all my training, my credentialing behind trying to normalize diversity and differences, because there's very few people in the psychology field or the medicine field normalizing that. Most of them want to say if it's a difference, it's a disorder. And I'm like, no.
So terrible.
It's just different and creative. Stop shaming it. For sure.
You're like the modern Kinsey.
Yeah, but that's what scares me. And that's why this whole sex addiction model, which again, you know, public service announcement, if your therapist uses the word sex addiction, run, because they're sex phobic. They're over-pathologizing.
Putting negative connotation on something.
I've had clients come to see me that have been in sex addiction treatment for 10 years or more. And in one session, they leave cured and free. Because I tell them things like, no, you just masturbate a lot. But yet, your therapist told you you're masturbatorily addicted and put you in a 12-step program. Because you masturbated every day. Most guys masturbate from 1 to 3 times a day. You're called normal. It's just really bizarre things
that
when you watch
really,
porn.
Yeah.
Porn is not bad. Porn can be healthy. I have some clients utilize porn to improve their sex lives.
Do you think porn can be bad in any?
For sure. Right? Everything can be bad. Everything absolutely can be bad, for sure. I mean, I think porn is the worst sex educator. It shows you the worst bodies.
Men, listen to this shit.
Yeah, no, for sure. Women don't all want a big cum load in their face immediately.
No, thank you.
Not every woman waxes themselves to a point of whatever.
Hello, I have some hairs around my butthole.
Not every woman wants, you know, anal. I mean,
I do. I'm going to stop you right there.
Yes. We're gonna circle back and talk about that in a minute. No, porn's got a lot of problems. It just shows rock hard, non-ending erections and girls that want
just
it in every
slammed.
Hole. Totally. But where it is good is that it normalizes a wealth of behaviors, because if you Google, you can find any sex act being produced in film, which means people are doing that. So I have clients that like diverse things to find the communities and see that. It can also make us feel more comfortable with sex. I have some sex phobic clients where I'm like, you need to watch porn. You need to watch more people having sex so you can calm down.
That's what I've been trying to do myself. Like,
good.
Sometimes I just watch it. I don't even play or masturbate. I'm just watching it to see.
Learn some things too. See what turns you on where you go, oh, I didn't realize that was actually arousing. Because look, long-term monogamy, if you want to have a long-term sex life, you're going to need a lot of newness and novelty.
Yeah.
Porn can be a way where you find new fetishes and kinks. I want clients to find fetishes and kinks. I want to walk them into them. I think that's a beautiful thing. It keeps things dynamic and interesting.
What do you think for long-term relationships? This is something that I've thought about in my mind, like just being realistic and also wanting to be more open for myself and my relationship. What do you think about couples introducing a third party just for a sex scenario?
I think it's great.
How would you approach why and how would you approach it?
Number one, the fact that we think maybe it's not a good idea just shows that we're sex phobic.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, if you do that and you realize, wow, that didn't feel good, don't do it again.
Right. Simple.
You move on. It's not something that's irreconcilable.
Or
right?
That you have to force yourself into liking or doing.
Totally. So number one, if you don't feel like you're with a partner where you could process with them during it and after it, whether or not you enjoy it, don't do it. Because you have to be someone that's safe enough. You could say to them, hey, this isn't feeling good. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And they'll politely say to the third, you know what, we're going to stop. And if your partner won't do that, that's not the right couple.
Yeah.
Afterwards, you have to be able to talk about it. How'd you feel about that? Do you want to do that again? Or what would we do differently? Also, number three, you have to be in a healthy place. If you're not a healthy couple, you're not ready to take that on.
Yeah. And it's not going to solve your problems.
Totally. No.
People do that.
Here's the thing. If you have a bad, broken relationship, you'll have a bad, broken, open one.
Yeah.
And I tell them you can only open it or try other things if you're already in a good place, because then you'll have this firm foundation upon which to do and talk about these things. And look, couples that are doing that in my office are having way more sex together. It doesn't replace. They're actually more eroticized.
Like just them together.
Yes.
Just them two.
Because they just saw their partner in an erotic state with someone else. It recharges them. They look at their partner again as a sexual being.
As a sexual being.
Yes.
That's so important. He's not somebody who needs to put the fucking dishes away. Well, I'm just saying, I think we get into these roles where it's like, and it's back to that whole societal influence.
Right.
Your man has to do this. Your woman has to do this.
Sure.
And we compartmentalize each other instead of looking at each other as sexual beings.
Right. Would you open yours? Would you bring in a third?
I think I would.
A guy or girl?
Whatever.
Cool.
Because I haven't done that before.
I have many times. And it's a phenomenal thing. I like being the third that's brought in, and I've also brought into my relationships.
I never even thought about being the third that's brought in.
Oh.
Hello, we should start a business.
There's nothing hotter than
third
watching
eye.
A couple enjoy each other enjoying you.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
You're like
would
a
you
little
say third eye?
Hello.
And we'll talk after. We're going to set up a new app.
Third eye.
Swipe,
God.
Swipe, swipe.
Holy
ranking
shit.
Ranking in the money.
I am not even kidding you
it's
right now.
It's just
going
to be me and you on it, though. They can only choose me or you.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
We put all
left
of
for you, right for me.
Our services
thank
are provided.
You.
There's a hole in the marketplace.
Oh, for sure.
That could be our motto.
More of us.
We're the hole in the marketplace.
Oh, I love you. You should definitely try it, though. I mean, again, the couples that do it, they come in, they're like, we've had more sex, just the two of us, this week after having done that, because we are just charged. I see my partner again as being this erotic being. But you have to be in the right place to be able to
do it. You have to be in the right place, and it's not... Do you think, like, I've heard this also being mentioned in reference to having somebody else introduced into the relationship. Do you think rules have to be set?
Absolutely.
And what do you think those rules should be?
You don't just wing it. Please don't ever just wing it.
Right.
You have to be willing to talk about it before. And I'm not a fan of saying, hey, let's talk it right now because in like 30 minutes I have someone coming over. Oh, no. Like, let's talk about it days in advance.
Yeah.
What are you hoping for? How can I let you know if during it I don't want to do it anymore, that I want to stop? Will you be okay if you're into it and I'm not stopping, if I don't feel secure? And then you also want to talk about what are some bonding things we can do immediately afterwards to create and close any, to close any distance we might feel as a result. So I want to make sure that afterwards you're like, you know, going to spend some time together and do some hugging and just kind of like re-coming together. But that's kind of it. Just really talk about what your expectations are. What are the things you can do if you don't want to have it continue? What are you open to having happen when with that third person?
Yeah.
What are we not wanting to do? What do we want just to be for the two of us? Some people might say, we'll just have oral with the other person. No penetrative anything, because that's
a good
special,
start,
right?
That's a really
right.
good start.
Or even just, we want the third to watch us. Or maybe one of them says, I don't need to be touched. I wouldn't mind watching you with someone else. I'm not ready to join in, or whatever it is, but yeah. Talk about what you want to have happen.
My guy has mentioned just being like a spectator in the sport.
Phenomenal.
Right.
And like, again, if it doesn't go well or you didn't feel okay, it is, you can move beyond that.
Right. Because you can set up your whatever you're comfortable with.
Sure.
And it just goes back to not being stuck in these lanes.
Sure. Afterwards, after the first time I did it, we had to talk about, how did you feel about that? Did you feel okay? Did you feel closer or more distant from me? Because I'm doing this to feel closer to you. If you feel more distant, then we need to do it differently, or we need to not do it again. Or is there something about our relationship that we realize that we want to work on? I mean, you have to really be smart about it and psychological. And that's why, if you're really unsure, make an appointment, see a sex therapist.
Who should they see, doctor?
Well, I'll tell you, honestly, I'm really, really careful about who I refer to, because, you know, number one, see someone who's a sex therapist. That's your best bet first off, prior to a regular therapist around stuff like this, generally.
Specific.
But then, even within the sex therapy field, there are some sex therapists that still use words like sex addiction. So avoid the hell out of them. Make sure they're certified. ASECT is the only certifying body for sex therapists.
Right.
That's your best bet. I can't promise anything with that, but it's your best bet.
Now, for me, someone who's, you know, a victim of rape and, right. and that sort of thing, would you recommend any sort of specific? I mean, I've gone to a regular therapist, like a clinical.
Which can be phenomenal. I mean, the implication
it changed
is
my
not.
Life.
Yeah, the implication is not that only sex therapists can work with sex. It's just traditional therapists aren't necessarily trained in any human sexuality or sex therapy.
Right.
It's not part of the programming. So they would have to have done that on their own. And if they didn't, then they're bringing in the same cultural biases everyone else is bringing in.
It's just kind of like
concern.
A conveyor belt of.
Totally.
Whatever they've been taught.
Totally. I have clients that come in. They're like, oh, my therapist told me it was, you know, bad that I watched porn. And I'm like, well, yeah, where did they get trained around those topics? Right. Nowhere. So they're just, you know, reading the same things you're reading magazine wise. People magazine said it's real. So I believe it.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to be careful. You have to be a smart consumer. But like you have to do with everything, though.
Yeah. It's like anything where you just try a little bit
yeah.
of a few different therapists. And like find who
I think you have to.
Yeah.
I think you have to. And here's the other thing. So not just to like pimp my book, but
pimp your book. You know what? You worked hard. Fuck that. Pimp that.
Well, I'll pimp it, but I'll also say the reason why I wrote the book was there were some people that either needed more of me or they didn't have access to me. And so the book is literally chapters walking you through a sex positive sex therapy session. It's really helping you look at and deconstruct where I might have problems or shame around sexuality and diverse relationships and gender, and kind of normalizing and really liberating and getting rid of the negativity and the pathologizing. So the purpose is to walk you through basically a sex therapy session, have you
That's
walk away feeling more empowered around sex.
So not so much how to solve your sexual issues,
no.
but how to approach going to a sex therapist.
No, not how going to
okay.
a sex therapist. It is about how to approach your own sexual stuff, but not
right.
everyone can go to sex therapy. They can't afford it. They don't have access. And so this book is the only book I'm aware of that really walks you through. Reading it would be like going to a session.
Right. That's what I'm right. trying to convey. That's really interesting because I don't think I've heard of any book that takes that approach.
No, they're usually very sticky. They're like, here's how to give a blowjob.
Right.
Or, you know, and it's like, I'm not going to teach you how to do that because I don't think there's one right way either. Everyone wants it differently. So the book is about actually getting you more confidence so that you can ask someone how they like to be orally pleasured.
Right. That's very interesting. And what is your book called, Doctor?
Oh, it's called Sex Outside the Lines on Amazon or, you know, Barnes & Noble. And talks about, yeah, gender, sexuality. It's for all couples. It's written for straight, gay, because it's not about those terms.
That's
it's
really
just about
important.
Bodies. If you have a body, the book is for you. If you're someone who wants to feel more confident with your body, more confident around sex, I debunk things like sexual dysfunctions. They don't exist. Erections operate all sorts of different ways. It's about kind of confident with that, not about finding weird techniques to make it last the way it's not supposed to.
Right.
All sorts of stuff is in there.
Or feeling ashamed for
totally.
Whatever you do. You have to find a way to make it work in your life in a healthy way.
Yes, that is exactly the key of the book. It's not about feeling bad about how I am and trying to change that, because that's not going to
happen.
That's
not
going
to work.
It's about how can I work with what I have and how I am and feel confident in it, for sure.
Did you have like a guru or something that brought you into this?
Yeah.
Because you are kind of like an anomaly within your industry, don't you think?
Sadly, I am.
Yeah.
I wish there were more people operating the way I did. So this is what I tell people. People will reach out at times and they'll say, where should I go to school? I want to do what you do. And I say, I had to unlearn everything school taught me, sadly. My gurus are all of the people that are out there, the black queer feminist writers.
Oh, man.
Hypothesizing and philosophizing, right? Sociologists. I had to just pull a lot of different stuff together.
You really are like Kinsey.
Thank you.
Well, just because he was, you know.
He was a pioneer.
He was a pioneer. And his medical peers didn't take him seriously because he was pushing boundaries.
Totally.
And that changed our idea of what sexuality is.
And
on
the other
that
thing
spectrum.
Is, just right now on Friday nights, I'm on Amber Rose's show.
Yes, please.
I do
promote that
on VH1, 11 o'clock. I'm on Amber Rose's show, and I do a segment with her every week where we answer sex questions. And you know, me and her are both really trying to do a lot of, you know, body normalizing and sex positivity. And so, tweet in your questions.
Well, it's funny you should say that.
Oh yes, right.
I posted. You know, I was like letting people know. First of all, everyone's like, "Who is he? Is he single?" I asked people to send in some questions. You want to answer a couple?
Sure.
Some of them are ridiculous, but you know what?
I got some of the ridiculous ones.
Yeah, you have to say, you have to. Why don't we kick off the one that you got?
Oh, okay.
Where is it? Your cell phone's over here.
So this was my favorite tweet question. And, you know, these kind come in. So the question was, give me one second.
I'll set up the ones that people posted on Instagram here.
Oh, this one was brilliant. Okay, yeah. Here we go.
Okay.
This is from Travis at Lope Dog. Thanks for writing.
Lope Dog.
Yeah. Dear Chris Donahue, what does Jesse taste like?
Cheez-Its. The answer is Cheez-Its.
Cheez-Its and hairspray.
That's going to be my book title.
It's a good combo.
My dog walker wants to know, can I get my girlfriend pregnant in any hole other than the vagina?
Wait, is this your literal dog walker?
This is my dog walker, yeah.
Oh.
He takes care of my dog.
Well, this is, so there, I work with mainly adults, and this is why. So I was at a conference and with a bunch of sex educators, and they were talking about safe sex for teens. And I said, well, if you're worried about teen pregnancy, no one gets pregnant by fucking in the butt. And it was like silence.
Wow. I love that.
Don't tell teens to have anal sex. Yeah, you should. No one gets pregnant from anal sex.
Right.
So teens are supposed to and going to have sex. In fact, if you don't, you're not normal, because 75% have sex in high school. I'd rather them have sex that's safer, and in the butt is safer in terms of pregnancy than in the vagina.
Hello?
Mutual masturbation. Please talk to teens about masturbating and porn. That is far safer. I'd rather teens masturbate together than you don't get pregnant that way.
You don't get pregnant and you learn how to be comfortable in
sex
a scenario.
Toys.
Oh my God.
Use sex toys.
Why is there not?
They're afraid because we're afraid.
Our education system is so fucked.
Yes.
In my health class, sex ed, do you know what I remember the most? Them showing that fucking slideshow of all the blooming onions that'll shoot out of your asshole if you have sex.
And remember, who taught that? Not
Mrs. Latonin.
Thank you. And what was her background? Because she wasn't a sex therapist or a sexologist.
Puritanical Christianity.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, who works part-time at the local whatever. Yeah. Why is she teaching that, number one? But you're right. It's all fear-based. It's
and
all
I always,
don't do it.
I always felt like she had a soul like you where she wanted to push boundaries, but had to go to this curriculum that she was forced to teach.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
It's horrifying. And why isn't there a course in school where you're like, where you teach that? You teach your children mutual masturbation
and butthole sex.
Because
we think knowing the capitals of every state, which is now Googleable and so useless, is more important.
It's
we teach useless information. If you can Google it, don't waste my time teaching me it in school. Because I'll Google it.
Seriously.
I don't need to learn Roman numerals.
No, I don't need it. And I don't need to know, like,
or
how to carry all this complex mathematics.
Right.
Come on.
You really never do use it.
I don't.
And I did two doctoral programs. You never use it.
Okay, here's my next question. We're going right along these segues.
Bring it on.
Laguna Speed 3 asks, is it true that if you don't use it, you lose it?
Yes. The more sex you have, the more sex you have. The people that have a lot of sex in their relationships are ones that have always had a lot of sex. If you go 6 months or longer without sex, you reach a danger zone of where it's even harder to bridge back. You've de-eroticized each other.
Wow.
You're not as comfortable. Your sexual psychology turns off. So when people are like, oh, I don't ever want to have sex, I'm like, do you masturbate? They're like, no. And I'm like, okay, you need to have more sex in general. If you want to have more sex with your partner, start masturbating more, start sexting them, start some more dirty talk. Here's what I tell my couples. Have sex with your partner in some form every single day. It can be a text, a look, a note, a wink, a touch, a blowjob, anything. Keep them sexualized. It's your erotic partner.
Like
it's your erotic partner. They're not supposed to be your best friend.
Yeah.
Let your best friend
or
be
your best
friend. Thank you. Yes. Keep them sexualized because the more you let it go, the more you're going to lose it, for sure.
I was just going to ask you, how can you get yourself in the mood or get somebody, your partner
in the
mood?
You don't have to if you've kept them eroticized all the time. It's just
every
inherently
day.
There. The energy's there. Again, it can be easy. A note, a look, a wink, a touch, something erotic.
A tit
erotic.
Pick.
Tit pick.
My man sent me a tit pick.
Thank you.
And I was like, ooh, child.
You should see the things I'm sending people that I'm currently talking to, because I want them to know sex is going to be seen as good. Sex is an appropriate form of communication and intimacy, and we're going to stay connected that way throughout
sex
the day.
Sex is love.
You can get some crazy shit from me throughout the day. Yes, I love you.
Oh my God, I love you too. Okay, wait, can we do a couple more questions?
Sure.
Just a couple more. Esther Mitchell asks, how do I get someone to have sex with me? What kind of question is that?
Yeah, that's really
so
broad.
She has some, it sounds like she might have some confidence issues.
Yeah.
Or she's being funny.
Go online.
Go online.
Go on Tinder. There's tons of people that want to have sex with you on there.
She looks good, girl. I mean, look at this chick. She's hot.
Tell
what
her
is
to
she
go
talking
on.
About?
Look
at that face.
Here's the thing. Adult friend finder, Craigslist, but do it safe. Let your friend know where you're going. Tinder, meet in a public place. But there are tons of people that want to have sex with you. I don't care what you look like. There are tons of people that want to have sex with you.
And there's nothing wrong with being a sexual person.
No.
I say in my stand-up that life is too short and you should explore. Like, put a thumb in a butthole.
Yeah, please.
You have been such a fucking
Thank
delight.
You.
Tell
too.
People your book,
oh,
your show,
okay,
everything.
Okay, so my book, Sex Outside the Lines. I'm on the Amber Rose Show every Friday night at 11 on VH1. I'm also on The Doctors, which is a daytime show. And tweet me at Chris Donahue.
I love everything that you do. Thanks. I love what you're teaching, and your whole soul, I think, is amazing. And your whole.
Thank you.
We have to do,
have a nice whole.
We're the whole in the market. And what the fuck did I say? Remember?
We're the hole in the market.
We're the hole in the market.
Yeah.
We're filling the hole in the market.
Yeah.
That's going to be our
app.
I'll
come back and we'll do a podcast about that.
You've been great.
Thanks.
I really appreciate it.
Sometimes if you don't feel aroused, if you don't feel sexually aroused at the same time, I tell you a secret. Give him an orgasm. It takes 2 minutes. It's not a big deal. Give him an orgasm. If he only touches your vagina and forgets about your nose and forgets about your breasts, you have to teach him. You have to take his hand and you have to show him what you need on your belly, on your behind. Show it to him. Don't expect him to know it by himself.
I'm trying to figure out if it's healthy for us to watch adult movies together. I mean, we've been together so long to where, I don't know, I just feel, you know, I'm just trying to see.
It's a great question, Adam, and I'm going to throw that to Dr. Ruth. Go ahead.
All right. I hope that every time you make love, before that, you are going to watch some explicit sexual movie. Close your bedroom door. Don't let the children watch. And then I have something else to tell you. Get your wife to buy the 3 volumes of Shades of Grey. Let her read it first, then you read it. And you can't let boredom be in your bedroom. Kick boredom out of your bedroom. Don't worry about being normal. Don't worry that you are not exactly like your neighbor. Do the best you can for yourself, for your partner, and then you are going to raise healthy, happy children who will be sexually literate. If sex has become a routine, make sure you go and see a sex therapist, somebody who can help you to spruce up and make your sex life better. Going looking outside is never going to work in the long run.